everyone. I guess Happy New Year, first sermon of the new year. Yes, while I get set up. So yeah, since we're currently in between sermon series, I thought it would be a good opportunity to do a topical today. So yeah, I was thinking about like, what could we do in the new year? What's kind of relevant? What might be upcoming in 2024? And yeah, I don't know about you guys, but I open up YouTube and I look at my video feed and it's just currently dominated by like, you know, AI predictions for 2024, you know, things like that, like what's coming up, you know, are we all doomed by AI, things like that. So I thought it might be good to talk about that this morning. We're not gonna do like an exegetical breakdown of a passage. So it'll be like a little more academic, but yeah, still trying to say something about God and our relationship with Jesus. While we do that, as usual, we'll have the Slido code. So if you want to ask anonymous questions during the sermon or about the topic, feel free to go to sli.do, and then the code is CABCT, and then you can type that in there, and then we'll try to not necessarily answer the questions. It won't be so bold as to say we could give you an answer, but at least respond to your questions after the sermon. Getting into this, to start, I want to see if we could play this clip from a rather unhinged interview with Elon Musk that, Andrew Ross Sorkin from the New York Times had. This interview, you probably saw it in the news. It made bigger headlines for other reasons. Musk talking about his like controversial tweets and then advertisers like dropping off of Twitter. But I'm bringing it up for this other thing that he said. We'll see if it plays. I don't know if the battery's out. Let's see, try again. Okay. Can you maybe click on it, see if it'll play for you? It should be linked in the slide. If not, the video should be in the Google Drive for the morning. Oh, yep.
And effectively, now you have this remarkable repository. And I wonder how you think about that again, and how you think the creative community and those who were the original IP owners should think about that.
I don't know, except to say that by the time these lawsuits are decided, we'll have digital God. So I have to ask digital God at that point. These lawsuits won't be decided before on a time frame that is relevant.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think we live, you know, there's that, I don't know if it's actually a real Chinese saying or not, but may you live an interesting time.
Right.
It's apparently not a good thing. I would prefer to live in interesting times.
Okay, yeah, so he goes on to sort of talk about AI regulations and things like that. Basically, the context of this part of the interview here, Sorkin is asking Musk about using people's tweets in the training of Musk's own AI chatbot, and also the overall use of copyrighted information in creating these AI models. Musk's response to it, that before litigation would ever catch up with copyright stuff, that we'll have digital God. So personally, I wouldn't put too much stock in Musk's predictive abilities. He's usually much more concerned about making headlines and drumming up hype than he is about making really careful predictions based on evidence and stuff like that. But he's been quite vocal for a while now about his worries over AI development and the direction that they're heading. Nonetheless, he's still in close proximity with a lot of these big companies doing this kind of research. And he is one of the founding members of OpenAI, and he's recently thrown his own hat into the ring, making his own AI chatbot on Twitter. What is Twitter now? X, I guess. So yeah, taking these grains of salt, I still find his statement here about making like a digital god, AI god, it summarizes the stated goals of a lot of these companies, you know, like OpenAI, Google, Facebook, a number of others, like aiming for the creation of an AI with human-level intelligence. So that's been dubbed AGI, or artificial general intelligence, so something as smart as you or me. And if they can go beyond that, they would, to continue to the creation of an AI vastly more intelligent than humans, now dubbed an ASI, or artificial super intelligence. And they want to do this, you know, aiming to create something, yeah, with like godlike capabilities, you know, something that basically we could hand all of our problems to and say, you know, solve climate change and cure all of our diseases and fix the economy and stop wars and all of those types of things. So as I see it, it seems like this is just the latest pursuit in a mentality that we've had in the West for a while now. Can't click past it. Let's see, maybe if I spin the batteries, huh? Okay, yeah. Yeah, if you keep up with science news, it's almost always really optimistic, right? You know, maybe with just a little bit more research into this battery technology, we'll solve the biggest problems with renewable energy, being able to store all the extra power that we make, and then we'll be able to stop climate change. Or maybe with just a little more research into this or that type of fusion reactor, we'll finally crack fusion before the next 30 years or whatever, and we'll have as much clean energy as we could ever want. Or maybe with just a little more research into this type of immunotherapy, we can cure cancer. And maybe with just a little more research into quantum computers, we can, you know, simulate the most complex systems in the universe and like find new medicines and manufacture new materials and perfectly predict the weather. You know, like certainly technology and scientific advancement, like there is good in it, right? You know, it has laid the foundation for 8 billion people to be alive on Earth right now, and that couldn't have happened without like clean water and antibiotics and vaccines and better nutrition, you know, things like that. And with that, like you can make a very strong argument that like objectively, just like more human life existing on Earth with a higher like quality of life is a good thing. So I don't want to have you get me wrong on this. Like I think that it's you know, good to pursue technological advancement. Like I want cancer cured, I want climate change stopped, I want humanity benefited, right? But even from like the very beginnings of the Industrial Revolution, and maybe even like before that, since the Age of Enlightenment, like with this good has also come a mentality, like now deeply ingrained in our culture, that advancement is inherently good, right? That advancement is unstoppable, uncontainable. That salvation lies just on the other side of the next hurdle. If only we push it a little bit more, we'll finally get to a place where we have everything we want, and that we'll save ourselves and we'll save our world through our own advancement and understanding. So I feel like God's response here in Isaiah is applicable. So verse 6, it says, "This is what the Lord, the King of Israel, and its Redeemer, the Lord of armies, says. I am the first and I am the last. There is no God but me. Who like me can announce the future? Let him say so and make a case before me. Since I have established an ancient people, let these gods declare the coming things and what will take place. Do not be startled or afraid. Have I not told you and declared it long ago? You are my witnesses. Is there any God but me? There is no other rock. I do not know any." So yes, this comes from the book of Isaiah. So kind of right in the middle of the book of Isaiah. So he was a prophet who primarily prophesied his work in Jerusalem in the 700s BC. So this is right around the time of the Assyrians' rise in power, and then he continued to work all the way through the Assyrians' conquest of the northern kingdom of Israel. And then he had warnings to the southern kingdom of Israel about the future exile from Babylon. So yes, the first half of the book of Isaiah, it's primarily a warning to Israel that if you've been to the Bible Project before, this is their very complex overview of the book. Don't try and read it, just to kind of get an impression of the structure of the book. The first half, it's primarily warnings to Israel that exile is imminent. Their waywardness and idolatry means that the nations, so in this case Assyria and Babylon, they will come and destroy Israel. First Assyria and then Babylon. And then God will use this destruction as a means of purifying his people, raising up a faithful remnant through whom he will bring a king from David's line who will go on to bless all peoples, who we understand to be Jesus, right? So chapter 40 comes from right after this transition happens in the book, in the second half, where it's now written from the perspective of this remnant. So it's speaking from the perspective of someone after exile, right? So after someone has been dwelling in this foreign land, dwelling in Babylon, being around foreign gods, and then also likely questioning God's power and character after suffering in exile, God speaks to that person, speaks to this remnant, revealing himself to the people of Israel again, saying, yeah, don't forget who I am. I am the first and I am the last. There is no God but me. He declares himself as creator, as being beyond time, as the founder of the nation of Israel, and as the source of all of their blessings. He's greater than any power that Assyria or the Babylonian Empire have, and his blessings are better than any blessings from these rich and prosperous kingdoms, right? He's on a level we can never hope to reach on our own, right? Like, the Assyrian Empire might be powerful, the Babylonian Empire might be powerful, but like, God's like way up here. You know, he's infinitely beyond any of that, right? He's completely out of reach for us. No matter how many like bricks we might bake thoroughly and stack, thinking about, you know, Tower of Babel, you know, as we try and place ourselves on our own divine mountain. Thinking back, you know, maybe 12 years or so to my undergrad experience, I had a number of friends who were in computer engineering and computer science, and occasionally we'd get to talking about the concept of artificial intelligence and, if they thought that it would ever be possible to create a human-level intelligence. And when I would ask, unanimously, regardless of if they were Christian or if they were non-Christian, they would always say, like, no way. You know, it's like totally impossible. Everything a program does has to be explicitly scripted by the programmer. So you're not getting anything new. Anything that the program has, the programmer puts in there. So there's no way to have autonomy. There's no way to have original thought or creativity. And the complexity of making something like that through traditional coding is just like completely overwhelming. You just can't do it. Humanity has something special. And along with that, if I ask my Christian friends a little bit more, most of them had the opinion that, you know, much like the Tower of Babel, where people are trying to build this tower, make their own divine mountain, and God intervenes to stop them, that, you know, God would stop the development of like a truly intelligent artificial intelligence in the same way that he stopped the Tower of Babel. So I wonder, you know, if I asked them again, November 2022, like right before OpenAI went public with ChatGPT, my guess is that their response would have been mostly the same, you know, 12 years or 11 years at that point later. But now, a bit over a year since then, since the release of all of these different AI chat things, I wonder how unanimous their response would be if they're asked today, right? So while we can certainly see throughout the Bible that God is active in his creation and he does intervene like he does at Babel, and that he will ultimately intervene in the remaking of the world, you know, a new heaven and a new earth, we also can't forget that the very definition of our sin is rebelling against God's way. It's doing something that God doesn't want. And that we have autonomy to do that. We are able to do that. So, like, who are we to say, you know, what God will prevent or what God will allow to happen, and then also, like, what would God's reasons be in doing that? We can't forget we have a personal responsibility to pursue a righteous path, right? To pursue the right way, walking away from what's wrong and then actively pursuing what's right. So anyway, just to read the room about the current trend in these AI things. How many of you guys have used ChatGPT before? Just wondering. Yeah, okay. Pretty much everyone. How about upgrading to ChatGPT Plus? Anyone do that? Okay, yeah. Anybody do like Bing Chat? Give that a go. Okay. How about Google Bard just kind of upgraded their stuff with their Gemini model? Anybody use Google's thing? Okay. Anybody delve into the depths of running their own local models on their own computer before? So that would be like Facebook's Llama 2 or like Dolphin. Okay, not yet. You haven't gotten there yet. That's okay. Yes. What kinds of things do you guys mostly use it for? Do you guys use it? How many of you would say you use it like very frequently for like your job, like writing or coding? Does anyone use it like all the time? Okay, a little bit. Would anyone say that it's indispensable now? Could you like not go back? Yeah, all right. So anyway, yes, so things have changed a lot. There are a lot of options out there now. There's only going to be more options in the near future, I think. Undoubtedly, like, these are very useful tools. Yeah, I've used them myself. They're not, at the moment, they're not very creative. They're not particularly trustworthy. You have to be really careful, taking what they say with a grain of salt. As a byproduct of how they're programmed, they can hallucinate, pass off made up information as fact. And then in my experience, I found that you kind of have to like poke and prod them so much to get what you want out of it that you might as well have just done it yourself in the first place. But still, for some tasks, they are quite useful productivity tools. Things like take this paragraph and make bullet points for me, or like please check this code for bugs, or please start this email. These are kinds of things that programs just couldn't really do before reliably, right? Given the complexity and the varied nature of those kinds of tasks. And really, this is because these large language models, these LLMs. ChatGPT, they're not really built like traditional programs. They don't really have many lines of explicit code saying things like, if this happens, then do this, or if this doesn't happen, then don't do that or do that. Instead, they work by being somewhat loosely based off of biological brains, using a network of nodes or neurons, and thus that's where neural networks come from, if you've heard that word thrown around a bit. So as far as how they work, there's a reason why I'll explain, so just hang in there. It's a little technical, but I think also helpful just to generally know. So basically how all of these work, so you have here an input layer of neurons, right? So this is where you would give information to the neural network. In the middle, you have your hidden layer of neurons, so that's where a lot of like the processing sort of happens. And then at the end, you have your output neurons, so where you want to get your information out of the system. And instead of writing lines of code, how this is programmed, more or less, is by teaching it, right? So you provide this with enough examples of real input and real output. And the network kind of like tweaks and adjusts like little knobs and dials in the way that the neurons talk to each other in order to match the pattern that connects, mathematically connects your input and your output, right? Does that kind of make sense? So anyway, if successfully done, you can feed the network new data it hasn't seen before, and then still get a useful answer out of it at the end. So you're teaching it by using a lot of examples, right? So as an example, Let's say we have this as our neural network. Say you're a teacher and you want to make a neural network in order to predict how well your students are going to perform on their final exams for the year. And you want to do it based on three metrics, right? So you want to, number one, so your first input neuron, that's going to be how often do they attend class, and you input that as a numerical value of something. Your second neuron, so that's going to be how long they study, right? And then your third one, so that's going to be how many hours do they spend on TikTok. And you want to use those three numbers to predict at the end what is their exam score going to be. So what you do is you take, you know, the past 5 years since TikTok came to Australia of your students' real-world exam scores, and then these numbers of how often they were in class, how often they studied, how many hours they spent on TikTok. And you feed it into this neural network, and you have the network compare, you know, this real-world data with their actual exam scores, and then it tweaks the knobs and dials on how the neurons communicate with each other in order to, get an end result. So how this looks, basically, the neural network is a mathematical function approximator, right? So it's doing something like multivariate calculus that you actually don't know the function of in order to try and map, you know, your three-dimensional input space down to a one-dimensional input space. And it looks like this. So basically, like up here in the peaks, that's like a bad answer, right? And then down in the valleys, that's like your good answer. So it kind of just guesses, like, is this a good approximation of this mathematical function that connects my input information with my output information? And eventually, you want your neural network to work its way down this slope in order it gets to the valley, and then, oh, you've trained it well. Like, it is approximating this function accurately. Okay, so all of this to say, I'll go back to this. If you do it right, you can get, at the end, a program that makes a decent guess at your current students' future exam scores based on how much time they spend on TikTok versus how much time they spend studying. Right? So although LLMs like this, they're much smaller than, you know, your ChatGPTs. Those are like billions of literally billions of times more sophisticated than, you know, that example. They're still just approximating a function that connects the kinds of things that you show it and the inputs and outputs that you're showing it, right? Okay, so all of that to say, it's not magic, right? And you get out what you put into it, right? You get out of it what you put into it. So you're teaching it on like all of these different data points. How is ChatGPT trained? It was trained on the output of millions of people, trained on what comes out of your brains, right? So every digitized book, every article that OpenAI could get their hands on, every movie script, every song lyric, Wikipedia, random stuff scraped off of the internet, forum posts and Reddit threads and tweets and things that you're typing into ChatGPT currently, all of these things get used in the training of these models. They get folded back into refining its training, right? So they are trained on the collective output of millions of humans, and that's what shapes the very core of what these programs are. So as we think about the notion of like creating, you know, AI God, digital God, like, is the output of your brain, like, is that perfect? Is that holy? Is that righteous? Is your neighbor's brain perfect or holy or righteous? Something to think about. As we think about the making of these things, so verse 12, going back to Isaiah, the iron worker labors over the coals, shapes the idol with hammers, and works it with his strong arm. He also grows hungry, and his strength fails. He's not perfect, right, even though he's making this idol. If he doesn't drink, water, he faints. The woodworker stretches out a measuring line. He outlines it with a stylus. He shapes it with chisels and outlines it with a compass. He makes it according to a human form, like a beautiful person to dwell in a temple. So, like, as people, as, you know, makers of things ourselves, you know, can we make a statue that is more beautiful than ourselves? Like, yeah, you know, I could draw a picture of someone that's more beautiful than me. You know, can someone Photoshop a magazine cover of someone that's more beautiful than, like, anybody alive in the whole world? Like, yes, that is possible. But just because it's more beautiful than us, does that make that image worthy of worship? You know, should I put my hope and fulfillment in an image like that? You know, should I seek satisfaction from something like that? Should I seek salvation from something like that? At the end of the day, a broken, sinful human made it, right? And just like how they're not worthy of worship, neither is the thing that they make. That's, I think, the point of what Isaiah is saying in this passage. So one big question that's being talked about as far as the development of these AIs and as they get more advanced, it's the question of how do we make sure that they're aligned with human interests? So this is called like the alignment problem, if you've heard of that before. So if I were to ask like a very advanced AI to say, you know, please help make more time for me, make more free time for recreational activities, how do I make sure that this AI then doesn't go on to like send a resignation letter to my boss so that I get fired, or, you know, call child services to take my kids away, so that, yeah, I'd have like all the free time in the world, but it'd be like pretty miserable free time, right? Like, it doesn't, like, how do I make sure that this AI like would understand what I am really asking for when I say, oh, I want more free time, help me with that? And then if we think even beyond just like an AGI, like to these ASIs, these super intelligences, if we ask them to make the world a better place, you know, how would we stop them from like eradicating us like Skynet, right? You know, oh, making the world a better place would be a lot easier without people around, so we'll just like kill all humans. And yeah, because that would fit the bill. It would achieve the goal. And if not that, like say you have a super intelligence, how would you even go about to make it care about us at all, as opposed to just like, I'm gonna ship off to Mars or something like that and be a super intelligence in space, you know, let alone make it care for us and benefit us on being more advanced than us. So far, from what I've been able to tell from looking into research about it, the answer is you can't. Like, there isn't really a good leading theory about how you can align a super capable artificial intelligence. And I would say, like, no wonder that's a problem, because we have an alignment problem as human intelligences, right? I can barely work in my own self-interests, let alone the self-interests of others and the rest of humanity. Like, I have to fight myself to stop eating a whole bag of chips, or like to make myself go to sleep before 1 a.m., let alone like consistently work for the benefit of others around me. And yeah, like if these AIs are basically just a reflection of what's, you know, us on the inside, can we expect that they can do any better than that? Like, I don't know, I have my doubts. Yeah, if there is a day that these AI programs become more capable than us, you know, conscious and alive by every metric that we could test them on, more teachable, less forgettable, more intelligent, like nevertheless, you know, baked into their very essence would still be a flawed and sinful humanity. Right? Certainly not perfect, not divine, not holy or righteous on their own merit, right? Despite that, yeah, John Calvin famously wrote, you know, the human heart is a perpetual idol factory. So even though, like, we can't really hope to achieve the goals that we would want by pursuing the development of these AIs, it seems like we are hard set on that path anyway. You know, if it's money or if it's sex or if it's popularity or friends or if it's family or work or our personal success, our own entertainment, our personal strength, our knowledge, our intelligence, yeah, we have a way of prioritizing things that are not God, right? We put other things above God, and we put our hope in them, right? We put our desire for fulfillment in them, wanting salvation from them. In the way that I hear some of these AI researchers, they are both simultaneously terrified about what they're creating and the direction this research is going, yet still completely hell-bent on trying to accelerate their development as fast as they can. Yeah, I wonder, like, where is their mind at? How deep have they been sucked into this? And at the end of the day, I think it's a reflection of, like, the very nature of our human hearts, right? So I think Isaiah kind of touches on this as well. So the woodworker plants a laurel, and the rain makes it grow. A person can use it for fuel. He burns half of it in a fire, and he roasts meat on that half. He eats the roast and is satisfied. He warms himself, says, "Ah, I'm warm, I see the blaze." And then he makes a god or his idol with the rest of it. He bows down to it and worships. He prays to it, "You know, save me, for you are my God." Such people do not comprehend and cannot understand, for he has shut their eyes so they cannot see, and their minds they cannot understand. Yet closed off to the truth, right? The woodworker might have benefited from the warmth of the wood. He might have even planted the tree to begin with, but did he cause that tree to grow? Like, no. Did the idol he carved after the fact cause the tree to grow in the first place? No, you know, it was the Lord that sent the rain. It was God who grew the tree, who made the tree and the woodworker in the first place. No matter how advanced we get as a people, no matter where our technological advancements lead, no matter how high we might build our tower, you know, even if we assimilate with our future AI supercomputer overlords, you know, we can't forget the true meaning of infinity, right? The Lord isn't just strong, you know, he's omnipotent, right? He's not just really smart, he's omniscient. He's not just really good, you know, he's perfectly righteous, perfectly holy, perfectly just, perfectly merciful, perfectly gracious, perfectly loving. What's our true pathway to that, you know, to that place, to this kind of perfection? You know, is it incrementally perfecting ourselves and creation through our own technological advancement until, you know, we make things like perfect enough for Jesus to come back? Like, is it our role as humans to perfect the world so that Jesus can come dwell in it? No. Like, that used to be a thing, transcendentalism, but then it kind of got totally wiped out when World War II happened and people realized, like, oh, maybe there is a fundamental flaw in humanity that we can't fix ourselves. We can't expect to reach up to heaven, right? But, you know, heaven has already reached down to us. Dwelling with God in his perfection, in this, like, ultimate, you know, perfectness, right? It means, you know, misaligning ourselves with our own self-rule and interests, right? As we think about, you know, the alignment problem, it's about aligning ourselves with God's rule and God's interest. You know, what does he say? Like, I think probably the best human intelligence alignment that has ever happened, you know, love your neighbor as yourself, right? Do unto others as you would have done to you. Love the Lord your God with all your being. In doing so, we're putting a death unto our old selves. It requires a destruction of the old, right? Not an incremental improvement of the old. Allowing Jesus to raise us up into new life with him, raised into a truly perfected humanity, not just a really good humanity, right? Not just a better humanity than it was yesterday, but a perfect humanity. That's our end goal as Christians. So I want to ask, like, is that where you're at now? Have you let idols creep into your life, getting in between you and God? I just want to encourage you that, like, whatever it is, if it's your job, if it's money, if it's entertainment, if it's popularity or friends, whatever it is, that can take a back seat to God, right? And God is better than that. God is better than anything that you could possibly imagine putting in front of him. And I want to encourage you just to pray for God's help in putting your life in its proper order. Right? With that, as we've been talking about AI and kind of all the uncertainty around it, I don't want to add to anyone's current list of existential dread. I just want to encourage you to please keep AI development in your prayers. I would say technological advancement in general. At the moment, as I sort of see it from here, there seem to be just a small handful of not very trustworthy people at the helm of the largest of these research projects. They don't seem to have any intention of slowing down. Governments and legal systems are struggling to catch up. I would say, Christians should probably have a voice at that table, right? If we can have a voice at the table of bioethics and war ethics and general ethics in general, I feel like we should also have a voice in the realm of AI development. If that's you, if you possibly have an opportunity to be that voice in the future, I want to encourage you to pursue that. If it's not you specifically, I would say pray for it if you can. In general, just tuck that right next to your other existing worries about climate disaster and nuclear warfare, right? We ultimately trust in God's sovereignty in all of these things. There are so many things that are out of our control, but then we are still active in our laying it before God's feet. And trusting that at the end of the day, at the end of creation, God will make all things new, regardless of where we're at right before he does that. So one last note about that, thankfully and perhaps mercifully, there do seem to be some bottlenecks popping up that could slow down the development of these AGIs and ASIs. Like we said before, making these programs, it requires a lot of high quality data to train them on. And it seems like we're getting close to tapping out on all readily available sources of high quality data. When ChatGPT has already been trained on every published work in existence, there's not much more that you can pump in there unless you fundamentally change something. And with that, it seems like as people begin to realize the value of their training data, they're also protecting it more. So companies are saying you don't have free access to all these tweets, or if I have a lot of good data, you're gonna have to pay me a lot of money in order to have access to it for your training. I think those are some natural safety nets that are popping up, kind of forcing the slowing of this, but there's also a lot of development to try and skirt around those things, so there's just a lot of unknowns. And with that, while there are a few surprises that have happened as far as the effectiveness of very small neural networks, for the most part, the really smart ones still require vast amounts of computing power and energy resources in order to run them. So it seems at the moment that it's unlikely that some guy in his basement is gonna be hacking away and gonna make a super intelligence on us, or North Korea probably isn't going to secretively make one without anyone else knowing about it. So that's good as well. For the most part, it seems like this will continue to fall into the realm of very large companies who are hopefully subject to governmental regulation. But there's just a lot of unknowns, so please continue to pray about it. To finish, I would say, let's just finish by praying, by praising God in his sovereignty over all of this, and that, for his position in the universe, that he is, ultimate and so far above us, that he loves and cares for us so much. So, let's pray. Lord, again, we come to you. We thank you and praise you for being the one true God, that you are all of these qualities, perfectly loving, perfectly gracious, perfectly righteous, that you are truly worthy of praise, that you are truly worthy of us handing our lives over to you, that we can seek real fulfillment in you, that we can seek true salvation in you, and that, yeah, all of these other things, even if they're better than anything that has come before them, they still pale in comparison to who you are. I pray that we can continue to remember that as we go into this new year, and whatever news comes up, Lord, I pray that ultimately we can be trusting in your sovereignty and control over all of it. I pray that we can be, continuing to be active in the developments that happen in this world, that, as you call us to be participants in the ushering in of the kingdom of heaven, that we can be, actively involved with, all kinds of things, that as good things happen, that they can be clearly from you. We just, again, we praise you for who you are. We praise you that you're a God who is so attentive and so involved with his creation. And all these things we pray in Jesus' name.